Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You may have seen very arresting photos in today's Irish Times magazine. And they are of eight Irish thalidomide survivors, because this weekend marks the 62nd anniversary of the global withdrawal of the drug thalidomide, but not in Ireland. It took a bit more time in Ireland. And I'm joined now by one of those eight, Fionnuala Cassidy from the Irish Thalidomide Association. Good morning.
Morning, Brendan. Thanks for having us.
And Fionnuala, you are on the front of the Irish Times magazine today, and it's quite a striking picture. And you are showing off your arms. Was that a hard one for you? It's not something you do, is it?
Well, I think when you've been stared at all your lives, as all the thalidomide survivors have, I think, you know, this morning, this is a big task for us, to have to, if you like, show our disabilities and show the reality of where we are now at our 60 plus years of age.
Do you hide it?
I'm afraid the campaign has made me not have to hide it, but I probably hid it for most of my life as best you could. And I think people actually who know me will probably get a bit of a surprise this morning to see it so out there. But, you know, I just have to mention the fact that we have Ger Kilduff, Mary Duffy, John Stack, Tommy Burbridge, John Carney, Austin O'Carroll, and the fabulous mum, 94-year-old Peggy, with her son Martin. I mean, for all of us, this is the thalidomide family. This is some of our thalidomide family. And the bravery to do this is enormous. It really is.
Yeah, it is. It's a great piece of work. Tell me about thalidomide. What was it? What was it for? Who was taking it?
Well, I think there's a great line that I must have heard somewhere, and I think it encapsulates everything that explains thalidomide. Thalidomide literally was a wrecking ball to the embryo. So depending on what day during pregnancy a mom might have taken it
for morning sickness,
then it crossed the placenta barrier and it did very specific damage on very specific days. So in certain trimesters and certain weeks, arms and hands are being developed. Some of our members have no legs. Mary Duffy there has no arms. Martin would have no ears, just a hole in his head. We would have deafness. We have some internal damage. Very specific to when it was taken.
So you know what day your mother...
Probably around 25, 28, when the arms in particular were being developed. And Brendan, I suppose the one thing that we need to say just at that, and I'm really conscious this morning, if you think that in 1961 alone, 51,000 packets of one brand containing thalidomide, it was the biggest one called Softanon here in Ireland, 1961, 51,000 packets alone. I think there'll be mums and older people today who are going to know that they took it, and they're going to remember that they miscarried, because it was that lethal. We know that over 90,000 babies worldwide didn't survive the pregnancy, damage in utero. And then when they were born, another 10,000, or of the 90, 5,000 didn't survive the birth or the first years of their lives. And that left about 5,000 worldwide after this huge drug. The push was enormous. It was the second only to aspirin in its sales worldwide.
So this was a wonder drug.
Oh, and it literally was advertised, safe as a sweet, a wonder drug. And it was very specific, Brendan, because men were taking it, you know, to calm their nerves. It was sold in syrup form. So a mum might have been dipping the baby soother for teething problems. And that gave no harm as such to the man or to the woman. Okay. It was very specific in its damage when it crossed the placenta barrier. That was the main thing.
And when did this emerge then that it was causing these problems?
Well, the drug was licensed for sale here in Ireland in 1959, but the manufacturer, Chemie Grünenthal, they were a very large German manufacturer of drugs. And the drug trade in, you know, the legal drug trade in the 60s was becoming huge. It was really a big spinner for, say, the German economy, for example. And different doctors and especially gynecologists around the world began to notice that they had sort of the common denominator in some birth defects was that the mother had taken thalidomide. But when they contacted the pharmaceutical company, they chose to almost take each notification and box it separately. They chose not to join the dots. And until it eventually had nowhere else to hide in pieces in the Lancet and stuff like that, they then withdrew the drug, as you said, tomorrow in, 62 years ago. A global withdrawal was announced.
What happened in Ireland?
In Ireland, it was very different. And I bumped into Olivia O'Leary the other day, and I was telling her, you know, I'm going to mention this again, because Olivia, a lot of your listeners would remember, like, she was a young journalist, and I mentioned her in the piece that I wrote in the Irish Times. And she was a young journalist, and she went to Germany to investigate the story, because it was so specific. But she and her researcher, they sat outside the Irish distributors, and they were trying to get a copy of what they were told was the notification that there was a withdrawal issued. And they sat there for weeks, and eventually what transpired was a notice was handed out to say this batch of drugs was out of date. There was no bells and whistles.
This was in Ireland?
In Ireland, yeah. That there was a deliberate decision. And so if you think that I was born in October 61, the month I was born, my mother, I have at home a photocopy of the prescribing, the prescription from the chemist. And it has Alka-Seltzer, it has talcum powder, and it has 20 soft and on tablets. So by not announcing a withdrawal, by giving it no media coverage, no notices in the papers, they left it in the shelves, like in people's cupboards in the kitchen, you know, in the medicine cabinet. And there was a very good doctor, a great friend of Terry Prone's, Dr. John O'Connell, amazing guy to our parents back in the 70s in the campaign. He also went to lobby in Germany. He was able to walk into an Irish pharmacy, an Irish chemist, a rural chemist, and buy it over the counter in 1963-64. I mean, he spoke about it in the Dáil. I mean, it was extraordinary.
It and must be hard to look at the prescription, is it?
Oh,
and think that little piece of paper, yeah, like, defined, yeah, your
absolutely
life.
But, you know, and it's funny the week that's in it, because, you know, we're marking the 62nd anniversary. And, you know, last year, the Irish Times and other newspapers would have had us standing outside Leinster House with our banner, "Not Dead Yet." The year before, it was like, you know, "Still Here," doing these sort of cold and hard to do when you're a disabled group and a very small group outside Leinster House or whatever. And this year, our numbers, our members are they're struggling, Brendan. It's the only way to say it. Damage and the overuse and the misuse of the disabled limbs over 60 years. It's beginning to take a real toll.
Age is hard.
Ages.
On it, yeah.
It's like we've aged rapidly, and you know, they're an extremely brave bunch. You've had Austin on. I mean, like, they're an extremely brave, and the glass is always full. But that's what we would normally do. And this year, we just didn't feel that we were able to do that. And when Nick Bradshaw wanted, I had spoken to him before about doing a photographic shoot that, you know, we needed to record almost for posterity,
yeah,
where we were at. And he has come up with this amazing set of photographs. And so that's, like, okay, that's what we decided we would do this year. And it's just needs must, I suppose.
And we'll get back to the generality of the campaign. I want to know a little bit about your life first. There's extraordinary things there. Tell me about the Irish Thalidomide Medical Board. And Austin has mentioned this to me before. So you were all called in, kind of, for...
Yeah, so eventually when the German manufacturer had nowhere else to go, and at this stage our parents would not have been aware of the very deliberate Irish state's involvement and their hand acting part of not really withdrawing it. Do you know what,
yeah,
I mean? You know, these things evolved over the whole many years of this campaign. The information became more obvious. So the German manufacturer, there was a huge court case in Germany, one of the biggest Germany had ever seen. But the plug was pulled on it after about 4 years, where the Grünenthal company said that they were actually going to file for bankruptcy and nobody would get anything. The German government were very concerned about protecting this huge lucrative pharmaceutical industry. And so the trial was stopped and a thalidomide fund was set up to try and agree to compensate children around the world. And it was at this stage that they had to then try and identify, well, who are the children? OK, so the Irish Thalidomide Medical Board was set up. German doctors came over and they advertised in the newspapers and people applied, or maybe doctors told some of their patients or whatever to apply. And I know Peggy used to say she got a telegram on a Sunday to be in Dublin on the Monday with Martin. And
it was show up and show us your damage, basically. Oh, prove yeah. it,
so yeah? I probably, except for the 27 times I was in hospital as a child,
yeah.
I didn't really have to be in hospital again until I was in Holles Street. And across my file, they had, you know, handle with care, very nervous. It just was an awful ordeal. I don't know how to explain it.
Day?
Oh, every bit about the examination, I think, is imprinted on all our memories. Because, Brendan, I tell you why. The way they worked it out was every bit of damage had a point system. So this finger or the amputation of this little thumb, that might have been 2 points. So this was 1 point. And so out of the scale of 100, every bit, you're missing ear, you're missing organs, everything was the thing. So they had to turn you inside out. And a lot of touchy-feely going on. Like, it was very tough to decide where you came on the scale of 1 to 100. And then depending on that scale, that's how they decided the compensation levels or the payment levels.
And is that when you found out about thalidomide?
Well, it was coming towards that. So the Irish Times very kindly, I've never written a piece before, and I wrote that piece this morning. My father and my mother and other parents, including Austin's dad, had started the parents just for thalidomide children. And I mean, you can't imagine in the 60s, you know, these were like very ordinary parents, and it wasn't the media thing we do nowadays.
Yeah.
How do they come together to try and support their children? And of the 100 odd children that came up to the different hospitals, I remember Rochestown Avenue Rehab, I remember Crumlin, only 32 survivors were acknowledged as being thalidomide. And the flaw in the system was, like, for example, we only have Jur there. Jur is one of our unacknowledged thalidomide survivors. In other words, she has now medical proof, categorical medical proof that her damage is thalidomide, as do the group of unacknowledged that we represent. But at the time, some of them were told, well, you know, one side of you is thalidomide, the other isn't. So you lost out. And luckily, I came from a family who was able to get an affidavit from the prescribing doctor, an affidavit from the pharmacy, and we were able to show evidential proof that mummy had taken the drug. But if you had no proof, you also fell at the fence. And yet we know that some of our survivors went to rural GPs. Some of them went to the same GP. And that's why the fact that some have been acknowledged and some haven't. And the GP opened the drawer and said, morning sickness, Miss is here. Free sample. No record. Mm. And like, those doctors are obviously well gone. And that's the way it happened. I mean, there were people going around supplying it to pharmacies, supplying it to GPs. It was available over the counter. Like, who keeps for years later the box of whatever? You know, it doesn't happen.
So do you remember being told that
O'Leary was coming to interview Dad in the house, and he asked me to come up, as in our house, it was always shout up the stairs or shout down the stairs. And he was homesick I've never remembered Daddy being homesick, you know, at the ending. But he said, you know, sit down there, I want to talk to you. And I do literally remember the bottom of the bed, the wood. I just remember that.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what he said, Brendan. I don't know the words he used. But I just remember that this was a very serious adult conversation with my dad. This was like just not banter. This was serious. And it just was a game changer. And I don't know why it was a game changer. Like, I wasn't suddenly undisabled. It didn't change anything. But I think because they were afraid that people were going to see stuff in the newspaper, other children might say it to us in school or whatever. I have to say, I look back with such pride at my parents. I mean, you know, Olivia said that to me once. I'm not one of the most affected. I'm probably what a lot of people keep telling me. I'm one of the lucky ones, you know.
Yeah.
And for them to do all they did, for all the campaigning, like, my mum stood in front of an ICA, you know, the Irish Countrywomen Association conference in the RDS, and she got a standing ovation from 2,000 other women, mothers probably, for her speech on thalidomide. And they weren't doing that for me. We were doing it. That's why we are a thalidomide family. And I just can't commend. And like that picture there of Peggy. Peggy's just home from hospital. Actually, your readers will be delighted to know she fell down the stairs at 94 recently, had a very bad fall. And we send her our fondest regards. Like, these are the women and those who lost the babies. And like, we have other fabulous mums around the country, but there's only about five or six. And, you know, none of this was their fault.
Do they feel in some way it was? Did your mother?
Oh, Mummy, again, you see, we never talked about those things, yeah. Did you? But I remember one very vivid occasion. And they took me to Lourdes, I think, when I was about two, but they also took me when I was 12, probably when all this was getting up. And I just remember the plane journey home. My mum looked fabulous in her Jackie O glasses and all that. She cried all the way home on the plane, silent tears behind the glasses. And I think, you know, she lifted up my arm for the blessings and stuff. I think she really thought I'd be cured. And she was, you know, it didn't happen. So I'm one of the lucky ones, as I say, and I accept that I am one of the lucky ones because I did come from a fabulous family. We're all gathering this weekend for a sibling's birthday, and that's all so special. But some of our members were sent away to special schools. Martin there was sent away to the deaf school, broke his mother's heart to go. And the stories that Martin has to try and now, in the old-fashioned sign language, is now some of it's only coming out to us now, and the ordeal they went through. So, you know, life was tough, and yeah. And that's why 62 years of this nonsense is just yeah. too long.
Still parading your yeah. damage, yeah. Listen, so you say your life was better. Like, so as a child then, did you have, I suppose, what we now call special needs, or did you need a lot of help? Did you get that help?
I know that from the file I have at home that Daddy kept and everything, that, oh, you know, it was suggested that maybe I should go to a special school, or I mightn't do, you know, other things, and, you know, what jobs I might get or whatever. But my family weren't having any of that, you know. And fair dues. And, you know, there was a benefit of being the youngest of six, because, you know, you put out your shoe and somebody's going to tie your laces. You stand there. I cannot do buttons for love nor money. My husband of, you know, I know him 40 years, still does my buttons. I can't reach down to zip up a coat. You know, I just stand okay. there and somebody zips up my coat. And it's probably one of the most affectionate things somebody can do for you when you're just standing there. Or friends turn around and they seamlessly do these things. And it's not begging favours. I never have to ask. And that's just lovely. So I was very lucky. And, you know, so be it. I was lucky, I suppose.
And what about other kids back then? Because I suppose we, you know, we weren't as enlightened then as we are now. And I think kids can be fantastic now with difference, like, and don't even see it. Back then, was it a bit different?
I think that the staring at, but I do remember we moved up from Cork to Dublin. Daddy was in the civil service and he got transferred up. And I remember going to Rockford Manor in Outham in Blackrock for the first time. Must have been the junior school, obviously. And I do remember coming home and being a bit upset to say, everybody asked me about my arm, or everybody was pointing at my arm. And my dad said, well, you go in tomorrow and you just say, but what about your nose? And I swear to God, there was probably mothers turning up at the school for the next few weeks giving out about noses and stuff. But I also remember in school, we had a particular sports teacher, the old PE teachers, as they were called. And we had a lovely lady called Miss O'Brien. And luckily, I was always a trier. Like my version of a handstand in gym class. Can you imagine it? And like my right. version of this, that and the other. Yeah. And I always, like, I was hopeless in school, probably D's in just about everything. But every year I got silver or bronze in PE just for effort. You know, like we, as a whole group, I think we've always tried harder than anybody else. And we've always had to go the extra mile. But it's in spite of thalidomide, it's not because of thalidomide. Yeah. And I know someone like Mary Duffy, like, I remember Mary said a word sometime, we won't let it define us. And like, genuinely, it's so weird that I'm even on this show. Like, just, you know, give me my life back. We shouldn't have to do this, but.
So you have, it hasn't defined your life.
I'm sure it must have impacted, because.
Because you don't know who you would have been otherwise.
And yeah. now, you know, look here, we're doing TV programmes and stuff. Like, what would we have been? I wonder, but, you know.
You wonder?
I do now when people yeah. sort of say, wow, you know, that was a lovely interview, or that was a right piece. And I'm like, God, no, you know. But yeah, I do wonder now. But that ship has sailed. We just want a quiet life now. I want to stay as healthy as I can, as all of us do. But the achievements of our group, our thalidomide family, like Austin was in the Olympics, for goodness sake, for sailing. Mary Duffy was out sailing a disability thing the other day. Jackie Brown has sailed around the world. Like John, like myself, great tennis player, only recently given it up. Like Tommy, riding the horses. It was in spite of thalidomide.
Yeah.
But it doesn't erase what happened and the, if you like, the burden or the legacy that we are living with. And it is a legacy, Brendan. It's an unfair legacy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, it has so many echoes of Purdue now and opioid and the behaviour of big pharma around that. It also has so many echoes of the dark chapters that we talk about in Ireland, where, like, you can see women, young mothers, women of childbearing age, all that kind of stuff. Like, it wasn't stuff that, you know, was dealt
and
with properly,
Olivia,
was it?
Olivia always told the story that she ended up interviewing Erskine Childers, who obviously became the president later on, but at some stage he was later Minister for Health. And, you know, off camera, and I actually dug out her piece, it was very obvious that they didn't withdraw the drug because, and it's somewhere in the Dáil statement, somewhere it is too, but they were afraid to issue a warning in case the shock of the possibility of carrying a disabled child might have made the mother miscarry. But what it really was, would anybody take the boat to England? If you knew you had a catastrophically disabled child, would you? You know, would you? And so, you know, this people sometimes say, oh, why the pharmaceutical company? Why the state? In our eyes, we have joint culpability. You know, there's so many, as you say, facets to this story, but the state has an involvement here.
So Grunenthal apologised, I think, 10 years ago for whatever that's worth. The UK government apologised in 2010. The Australian government actually going to apologise on Wednesday. No apology yet from the Irish government. And that's what you would like now, year all getting older. And for the mothers, the five, is it that you say?
It's about the five or six mothers and you know, there'll always be apologies will mean different things to different people. Some people will reject them because they fought so long to get them. But I know that some of these mothers just want to hear those words. It was not my fault. Now, I think all of us have reconciled, you know, that that's the truth.
Yes.
But I do think the state, you know, we were the children of the state and they failed us on so many levels. And I do think the mothers in particular, but the whole group, you know, like siblings who had to deal with catastrophically disabled children, it is, the apology is warranted. And, you know, when we were all growing up, we mostly came from families, didn't we? That it was the right thing to do to say sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry is the right thing to do. So look, you know, here we are at the end of all of this and we just need... It's becoming cruel to make it last this long. And I think, you know, if we achieve anything today and after this is let's move it on now, folks. Let's get this deal done. Let's close out on this tragedy that is thalidomide and continue to applaud those who have led extraordinary lives.
Yeah, you're tired. You've had enough, haven't you?
Yeah. Wrecked.
Finola Cassidy from the Irish Thalidomide Association. Thank you very, very much. We'll take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.